Hi, everyone. Welcome to Waste 360's Nothing Wasted podcast. On every episode, we invite the most interesting people in waste, recycling, and organics to sit down with us and chat candidly about their thoughts, their work, this unique industry, and so much more. So thanks for listening and enjoy this episode.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome. My name is Art Moore. I'm founder and CEO of a company called Sniffer Robotics. I've been asked to moderate the session here. We have four speakers today. Each speaker has about 15 minutes to present their slides. I'd like to introduce them very briefly. I'm going to introduce you all at the same time, if I may. Peter Quigley, CEO and chairman of Loci Controls. He will start off presenting today. He is a seasoned entrepreneur with experience in private venture capital, strategic, and private equity partners who has commercialized technology that is disruptive to large and mature commercial markets. He is currently the CEO and chairman of Loci Controls, a Massachusetts-headquartered cloud-connected technology-enabled services business focused on maximizing methane capture and emission reduction at landfills. Peter has a BS in ocean engineering and completed 1 year of graduate school at MIT under the Robert Bruce Wallace Prize and has served on MIT's mechanical engineering and student life visiting communities. Dan Cusworth is a research scientist at the University of Arizona and project scientist for the Carbon Mapper satellite mission. He was formerly a data scientist at JPL and worked on quantification of anthropogenic carbon dioxide and methane emissions for regional to facility scales. He designs multi-tiered observing and analysis frameworks to provide actionable data for greenhouse gas emission. He received his PhD in atmospheric chemistry at Harvard University. Eugene Tseng is an environmental engineer and attorney with 50 years of design, regulatory, and construction operational experience with MRFs, transfer stations, and alternative conversion technology. He has a wealth of experience written here. I'm not going to go through it all, please, but I'm going to sum it up by saying he's a founder and instructor at UCLA's Extensions Recycling and MSW Management Program. He was a charter member of US EPA's National Advisory Council for Environmental Policy and Technology Transfer. Most recently, he has been working with NASA, JPL Carbon Mapper, and RMI in establishing an international network of satellites to monitor methane emission and develop technical assistance programs for mitigation. And finally, Kirk Shaner, Vice President of Engineering and Sustainability at Waste Connections. He's been there since November 2020. From April 2002 to that date, he has served as the Eastern Region Engineering Manager of the company. He has held various positions at Waste Management and its predecessor companies from June 1990 through March 2002. From February 1988 through June 1990, Mr. Shaner worked as a consulting engineer focused on landfill design and permitting. He is a professional engineer, received a BS degree in civil engineering from the University of Miami. So all very esteemed people here, and I appreciate them again being out here. I'll turn it over to Peter to start the presentation.
Good morning, everybody. I'm thrilled to be here, and I want to share my perspective. And really, I think my remarks will really reinforce the catalyst and the need for this emerging area of real-time methane emissions measurement. Just as a big picture, I think all of you are aware there's enormous amount of interest both in our industry and in the financial community associated with renewable natural gas. There's been approximately $5 billion of commitments announced this year alone to build renewable natural gas facilities at existing U.S. landfills. It's receiving a tremendous amount of interest. The California Public Utility Commission recently passed rules indicating that by 2030, 12% of all of the gas distributed in the California utility system will be renewable natural gas. So there's absolutely enormous attention and focus on what I consider to be the downstream use of landfill gas. Remarkably little focus on maximizing resource recovery. So really the big picture, I just want to start out with really the big picture. There's no investment that can be made by our sector, I believe, that will produce higher returns and do more good for society than focusing on maximum methane capture in landfills. There, and you'll see in my upcoming remarks, for 30 to 40 years, the focus of global climate policy has been directed to CO2 emissions. It's produced the wind, the solar, the electric vehicle industry. The emissions of methane accounted for over a 20-year time horizon are the largest source of greenhouse gases in the United States, bigger than the entire electricity utility sector, greater than the entire transportation sector. And to date, almost no public policy is specifically directed to methane emission reduction. That will change. But just a quick background, all of you know, I presume in this room, that landfill gas is formed in real time from decomposing organic material. I had a background in commercializing technology in the upstream oil and gas sector. And it's interesting because people have a perception landfills are really sort of steady. They're very kind of almost hidden in plain sight. There's not a lot going on at landfills. And by contrast, in the oil and gas sector, decomposing organic material millions of years ago created oil and natural gas. It's trapped miles underground, completely isolated from the environment. A landfill, by contrast, the organic material is generating methane in real time. It's in connection with the atmosphere, changing weather conditions, changing atmospheric conditions, changing in rain, snow cover, et cetera. It's actually incredibly dynamic as an environment, and it's also the third largest source and the most concentrated source of methane emissions on the planet. So if you look at the data, in the 1,000 largest landfills in the United States account for the majority of the methane emission reduction, and if you contrast that with the oil and gas sector, there's an estimated 3 to 5 million point sources of methane emissions in the upstream oil and gas sector in the U.S. alone. If you compare it to livestock, there are 100 million dairy cows in the United States, each sources of methane emissions. So by EPA estimates, half of all methane emissions relative to oil and gas and livestock come from landfills, but there are only 1,000 of them. So if you think about it, in the most concentrated source of methane emissions, we know right where they are, they're not moving. You don't need a lot of infrastructure to be able to access them. So it's really, I think, just natural that this opportunity to drive methane emission reduction and increase methane capture at landfills is something which is coming. So in terms of background, capture of landfill gas was really an outgrowth of the Clean Air Act from the 1970s. So starting in 1996, under the EPA's NSPS regulatory framework, both the design and the operation of landfill gas collection systems was specified. How they needed to be built, when they needed to be built, how they needed to be operated, what are the operating parameters that you need to meet, and what are the checks to ensure that you're in regulatory compliance. This is just a brief summary of these operating requirements. And the point at the bottom, I think, is very noteworthy, is virtually, and for good reason, landfill gas collection has been designed for more than 25 years to operate to meet and or exceed the regulatory framework. That's been the basis under which landfill gas is being collected in the United States. What's the current performance? Just simply put, it's not very good. And there's different measures, and this is why methane emissions measurement is so critical, because the basis for estimating collection relies upon a model. And of course, models are imperfect. Models are subject to disagreement. So these numbers, there's a range of estimated collection efficiency, but the EPA estimates it's 58%. The EPA greenhouse gas accounting system estimates it nationally closer to 75%. So the bottom line is, it's not 100%, it's not 95%. And if you contrast it with the production of oil and gas, there's an entire industry focused on maximizing resource recovery, and that doesn't exist yet in the landfill sector, but I believe it will exist in the future. What really is the key enabler to drive performance is the subject of the next three presentations, which is, what are the emerging areas in which we can measure methane emissions? And this is just a perspective of one of the operators in the renewable natural gas space. They operate a very large project, the McComas Bluff Dallas Municipal Landfill. It's over 500 acres. And I think that quote is very appropriate. That's 5 years ago, and it's largely true still today. And I think that this is definitely going to change in the future, that there's an enormous amount of activity and investment in the downstream. The beneficial use of landfill gas has not been matched with ultimately the focus on resource recovery, and there's only a limited amount of organic material and methane and CO2 that's being generated in landfills. It's our mission to go about doing everything we possibly can to capture as much as possible. So, and this is why I think there's going to be a change in direction. It's just the last year, it's remarkably not even a year, that the UN's, kind of call it the panel experts, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, prioritize reduction of methane emissions by half over the next 10 years as the single most important priority globally to reduce the effects of climate change. And if that doesn't happen, all of the investment in wind, solar, and electric vehicles won't keep us below 1.5 degrees C presumed tipping point. So that, for people that have been around methane emissions, that's revolutionary, because really there's been two generations of focus on CO2. Between June and November, 111 countries signed a pledge to reduce methane emissions by 30% in the next 7.5 years. There was no methane pledge a year ago. It wasn't even on the table. So you can see that the world's policy has shifted rapidly. The catalyst, the financial incentives, the public policy specific to methane emissions, I think is coming. It hasn't happened yet. This is why I think this is such a great opportunity for our industry. Maximizing methane capture aligns with why we're all here. There's an opportunity to drive financial performance. There's an opportunity to reduce the greenhouse gas footprint of society by reducing methane emissions. And as I'm anticipating, there's going to be a very large financial catalyst to drive this action in the future, I believe. Because it's the easiest, lowest hanging fruit, biggest impact opportunity to reduce methane emissions. But what LOCI does is instrument the gas collection system to provide real-time data, and that real-time data is used to affect action. That action could be adjustments to the process, that action could be field repairs, sending people to the field, the action could be maintaining a liquid pump. But the key is having real-time data catalyzing action to maximize methane capture is a significant shift in the way landfill gas collection is operated. And this, just to summarize, this is stuff we all know how to do, actually. We don't need to invent any new technology to enhance methane capture. Liquid management is a key opportunity. As soon as it rains in landfills, again, they're not isolated from the environment, that liquid finds its way into the landfill collection system, managing it in a more effective and more efficient way, in a safer way, so you have less people in the field. The equipment that's put in the field is operating the way it's intended. I think this is something which is going to come. Collection wells today are drilled every 200 feet in terms of radius spacing. Rarely are they drilled at different intervals. I think there'll be an opportunity to use some of the stuff that's oil field technology from 100 years ago to characterize the subsurface of a landfill to figure out what's the optimal placement of collection wells. Speed is important. So in other words, if you can build collection system expansion faster than regulations require, that will enhance collection. Operational speed and real-time response. These are complex systems operating in the real world, lots of points in which leaks can occur. Having real-time data allows you to manage those operational challenges in a way that's more efficient and enhances overall collection efficiency. And just to really close on this as an example, in the United States, and this number is projected to grow substantially over the next 3 to 5 years, but there are approximately 70 operational renewable natural gas projects on landfills. There are just over 400 electric projects. The value of those, the renewable natural gas, is primarily supported by a federal program to lower emissions from transportation called the Renewable Fuel Standard. Those 70 projects generated $1.5 billion of credits under the Renewable Fuel Standard in 2021. Based on the average collection efficiency of those projects, $1 billion of renewable natural gas was not collected. And if you use a value of $51 per ton as a value for CO2 equivalent emissions, and for some references, that's the federal government estimate for CO2 emissions, the cost. The California Low Carbon Fuel Standard and the Oregon Low Carbon Fuel Standard, the price today is just over $120 a ton. The federal government has a carbon capture and sequester program that's at $35 and $50 per ton. Voluntary carbon credits today are approximately $10 a ton. So $51 a ton is by no means an outlier in terms of the value. The value, if we can monetize the emission reduction at landfills for collection beyond the regulatory performance, is $1.3 billion. So not capturing the methane on 70 landfills out of 1,000 is nearly twice the size of the entire renewable natural gas sector operating on landfills. So not only is it the right thing to do, but financially it's going to be an enormous opportunity to add value to all of the stakeholders in this sector. So it's, you know, I'm looking forward to your questions, but basically that's my proposition, is this is coming. I think this is low-hanging fruit. It's not rocket science. This is not that hard to do. It's just get data on a complex operation in real time and then use that data to maximize safety, operational effectiveness, and minimize environmental impact. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. I'm really excited for this opportunity to talk to you all today about what my team has been doing at Carbon Mapper, which originated at NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and where we're going in the future with this, and specifically some case studies in the waste sector. So just to give you a little background, a little bit technical, but it's worth talking about, we do something called spectroscopy. So if you take out your iPhone camera, you take a picture, it's looking at wavelengths. And this chart doesn't go all the way, but it looks in the visible wavelengths, 400, 700 nanometers. As soon as you buy an infrared camera, you're starting to look at wavelengths we don't see with our eyes, but, you know, that might have some other features to it. You know, if you ever stood in front of a thermal camera before, or in COVID, you know, someone pointed a thermal camera to you, you know, you might heat up or cold or something. You don't see if somebody is cold, you know, with your eyes in the visible, but if you have a thermal camera, you can see it, right? Well, the same thing happens with methane when you develop a measurement technology in the shortwave infrared spectrum. Methane really absorbs strongly radiation, solar backscattered radiation. So if you design an instrument to observe those wavelengths, you can infer any methane You can basically get a picture of methane that you weren't able to see with your eyes. So that's what we've done with our aircraft here, and essentially what we're doing with the satellites, is we have an aircraft that scans the Earth's surface at about 3-meter spatial resolution, quantifies methane emissions in each of those pixels. So 3-meter spatial resolution, that's high enough resolution that you can start to delineate plumes. And so, you know, plumes of kind of any sort, you can think of an oil and gas, you know, the most canonical, there's a big, you know, flare stack or a leaking pipe, you know, you can see the plume going, but also at a landfill, it is sensitive to these types of emissions. Kind of one more technical slide, specifically about the technology that we use. It's important, at least for the sake of simplicity, to define various types of emissions that may occur at a landfill. And so here, for simplicity, I'm defining them as an area source or a point source. So when I say an area source, you can think about, you know, again, simplification, but anywhere where there's probably buried trash on the face of a landfill, there's some small emission, maybe very small, that's permeating from the surface, a diffuse small emission. Together, those make up the total area source, the flux that's coming from that landfill. There might also be something else happening at a landfill, which is a point source. So you could say maybe there's a well that's broken, maybe there's a leak, maybe there's some concentrated emissions in one part of the landfill. That's a point source. So this is a really strong concentration. And so when I'm talking about the technology that Carbon Mapper is developing, we are sensitive to the point sources, not the total area flux, but the point sources that may originate. Generally speaking, these are the types of places, not always, where there may be something problematic. There may be something broken, you know, maybe a place that you want to go look, spend some more attention looking at. And that's really what we are measuring. So need to lay that out to begin with. Just to give you some background of some of the work that we've done, from 2016 to 2018, we flew this instrument. It's called AVRIS-NG, the Airborne Visible Infrared Imaging Spectrometer Next Generation. I did not pick that name, but we flew it over hundreds of thousands of potentially methane-emitting facilities all across the state of California. So over 200,000 facilities. If it could emit methane, we flew it. And what we found was something, you know, I'm trying to watch the nomenclature here, but we found a subset of these facilities had disproportionately large emissions. Some people call these super emitters, but, you know, you call them high mode emitters, heavy-tailed emitters, something, you know, that's disproportionate to the rest of the population. And in the landfill sector in particular, we flew over 400 landfills or composting facilities or digestion facilities and only detected plumes at about 30, at least in the landfills, about 30 of those landfills. So about 10% of the landfills we flew, we detected point sources at. This doesn't mean they weren't emitting, but that we were sensitive to the point sources. But if you were to take the emissions from those landfills, they made up 41% of all the emissions we quantified across all sectors, oil and gas, et cetera, in the state. So it was a small population, but it was a significant fraction of the total emissions. Since then, we've gone to other states in the United States. In fact, we're flying, well, we're on break right now. We've been flying this year. We're going to continue to fly throughout the rest of this year and continue to fly until, you know, the bank account goes dry. So we keep doing this. We've now gone to multiple states, and we go multiple sectors. So it's not just landfills, but oil and gas as well, and livestock are the principals, and coal are the principal sectors we go after, but across the United States. So into Texas, Colorado, Utah, Louisiana, Pennsylvania, a little bit in Ohio, Michigan, a little bit in Canada, with more to come. So this is the plot on the left. You can get this data at carbonmapperdata.org if you want to see. You can visualize the plume imagery. On the right is where we've detected methane plumes. Again, this is just to give a representative example of the types of imagery that we get from this technology. So here's the landfill on the left, just a Google Earth image of it. When we scan over the landfill, we can detect plumes. This is a, you know, fairly large plume that we detected at one of the landfills. So it kind of permeates across much of the landfill surface, but you can see where it's yellow, where you have those higher concentrations, those might be the areas that you would want to look to first if you were going to, you know, see if there was something that mattered, if anything at all. Just some more background. You know, one of the great things about remote sensing is it allows you to measure at places that are kind of hard to do from the ground. One in particular, here's another landfill in California. It's a little hard to see from this imagery, and I apologize for swapping the color bars. These are taken from various different publications, but we were able to quantify a plume coming from a region of the working face of the landfill, which was interesting because it's new trash, but, you know, we haven't quite gotten to the bottom of why, but there was certainly a significant emission there, plume. This is an area that would be, you know, not impossible, but very difficult to monitor well from the ground, given that it's pretty difficult to walk around a working face. getting back to the various types of emissions that we might see at a landfill, here's another one not in California. On the left, where we see two types of plumes, the one on the left coming somewhere on the face of the landfill, and then on the right appears to be a vent. So it seems to me there's some cold venting. It looks like maybe it's a flare stack that wasn't lit, wasn't combusting. What was interesting about this landfill, in particular, as we flew this originally in spring of last year, quantified these emissions. I'm trying to not say exactly where it was, but I'll say that there was a hurricane that happened over the summer, got a lot of water on that landfill. We came back about a month after, and we saw even larger methane emissions because this landfill had flooded. You still see the leaking vent, but now across basically all of the landfill, there's just massive plumes that we quantified. Also want to say this isn't just restricted to landfills. You know, anywhere where we are generating methane point sources, our technology is going to be able to do some quantification. So here's two examples in California. The one on the left is a dry digestion facility. The one on the right is somewhat more of a typical composting facility. Anywhere where you might have some methane emissions that aren't being captured and being released to space, we're going to see it. And this is important when we're talking about, you know, various methods to reduce methane emissions. I take no stand on what's the best. That's out of my domain of what's the best operator practice or the best waste diversion practice. But basically, what I do think is very important is to say a place where you can generate methane, we should be monitoring, right? We should be looking at to make sure that the intended, the desired outcome of a certain practice is having its intended effect. I'll say real quickly, Eugene is going to talk actually in detail about this, but we have used our, when we fly over landfills multiple times and we know something that's happening at the surface, this technology can be used for validation. And so this is a case study at the Sunshine Canyon landfill where we flew for about a year repeatedly while they were undergoing some pretty massive infrastructure improvements. We were able to, you know, verify that they were having the intended effect. And that's what we're showing on the left here is the drop in methane emissions that correlated very well with a drop of odor complaints. So all of this is leading up to satellites. So it's great what we can do with aircraft, but aircraft are expensive and it's hard to have a global survey and it's hard to have, you know, repeat coverage. You know, you can't be, you know, monitoring in California if you're out in, you know, West Virginia or you're somewhere else. I mean, it's hard to be everywhere all at once. And so really this is the push. It's trying to go to a space-based remote sensing system and really a constellation. The more satellites you launch, that really means the more space you can cover and with more frequency that you can image a landfill. And that provides better real-time actionable data for someone at the landfill to be able to take the appropriate action. And it also improves emission quantification because we're starting to better characterize things like seasonal variability or construction or short-term events versus the long-term nature at the landfills. So that's what we're doing at Carbon Mapper. We are launching two satellites that build off of the technology of our airborne campaigns. They will go up in 2023 in our first phase, and then we're going to expand that constellation starting in 2025, likely with six more satellites, and we hope to get up to 20. When we do that, we'll be able to have sub-weekly sampling of all the major methane emitting and CO2 emitting regions on the globe. This is a public-private partnership, and kind of the foundation keystone of this is that all the data gets made available publicly, likely within 90 days of acquisition. So anyone can have it. And we're also working with Planet Labs, and so they are prototyping a rapid leak detection and repair service, so subscribing customers could get the data as fast as 24 hours after acquisition, but it will all go public after 90 days. And just to contextualize a little bit why we want to do that, we're thinking of this as a global, it was a really wonderful talk, last talk, and thinking about what is the global impact of methane emissions from waste. The little bit of tasking we've done with available satellites, which aren't great at the current state of the art, but the little bit of tasking that we've done in many areas of the developing world have shown that, you know, there are methane emissions that kind of literally blow anything out of the water that's happening in the United States. So, and it's something that IPCC or inventories just don't have any sort of handle on whatsoever. So we're also thinking of that as we go forward. So I'll leave it there. Just say that the airborne monitoring with imaging spectrometers has really shown us what the possibility is in the waste sector in addition to other sectors. Again, really important, this is point sources we're talking about. When we talk about these emissions, we can get over many types of activities that happen at a landfill, and not just landfills, diversion facilities, and this is all leading to space. So anyway, look forward to your questions. Thank you so much.
Good morning. So this talk is going to be in two parts, and this is really an example of how useful the data is and how the aerial imaging was used to validate improvements of the infrastructure at Sunshine Canyon Landfill and how it could be used to improve operations. So just a little bit of history of what actually went on at the landfill. This is the landfill, Sunshine Canyon Landfill, actually began in 1958. And still operating today. But you can see the red line is kind of the number of odor complaints per year. So you can see in 2008, 2009, it really started jumping up. So it got to over 1,000, almost 1,500 odor complaints a year. That's a lot. So the local enforcement agency was asked to basically solve this problem. One of the things was, hey, the odor is because the landfill is just getting more trash. But you can see the red line on top, the amount of trash coming in per year is actually pretty steady. At the bottom, you can see the blue bars. That's actually the number of odor complaints and a number of mitigation measures that changed the entire infrastructure and the operations at the landfill was put in around 2017 as a result of an abatement order. You can see how successful those mitigation measures are because the odor complaints dropped significantly. So I'm going to describe some of these measures that solve the odor problem. And how is odor related to methane? Well, it's very a roundabout way. Landfill gas, mostly CO2 and methane, are odorless. And one of the initial beliefs was the odor was caused by a lot of trash, or what we call fresh trash odors. But actually, during our research, we found that most of the odors were actually coming from landfill gas that was escaping. And we basically used the measurement of methane as a proxy and use the landfill gas as a carrier for odoriferous compounds. And so what our local enforcement agency did is we put together what we call a whole suite or a combination of best management practices, which I will go through, to show you what was done to reduce the amount of odors successfully. And basically, like I said, the single most important thing was really to improve the landfill gas collection system. And of course, we also try to address fresh trash odors. And all this is available. Our email is at the end. I will send you this presentation. But one of the primary causes of the landfill gas odors was the landfill gas collection system wasn't working well. And one of the reasons was one of the regulatory agencies had mandated a practice, which was non-industry standard, that was putting a minimum of 9 inches of compacted soil as the daily cover, and don't peel it back in the next day of operations. What that did was created these impermeable layers in the landfill and basically created perched water, and it basically flooded the landfills and basically rendered it ineffective. And so a whole host of mitigation measures went in, including the improvement of the daily cover and the intermediate cover. So every grid that you see there is 50,000 square feet, 200 by 250 square feet. So you can see on the surface of the landfill, we're trying to increase the amount of vacuum to be applied. We put posi shell, we put vegetated layer. Vegetated layer creates a biofiltration effect that would oxidize methane. Closure turf is basically, this is the first international application of closure turf as an intermediate cover. So alternative daily cover, we got away from the soil cover, put in basically a biodegradable plastic, very thin plastic alternative daily cover, and the next day they would put the trash on it, and that would actually destroy that plastic alternative daily cover. But spraying posi shell, this is about somewhere between $12,000 to $15,000 an acre for this specific mix of material to increase the impermeability of the intermediate cover, and then closure turf. So there's the three stages. So this is the preparation, this is the pieces of plastic that was seamed together, and this is the artificial turf that went on to be able to control the rainfall. And on top of the soil that's prepared, they put these flat pipes to collect the gas that come through the surface that would be trapped underneath the closure turf. And that's the closure turf, and every vertical well that you see there is sealed. The typical landfill gas vertical well is about one per acre or one every 200 feet. But in this landfill, the system was damaged so bad that they had to put in almost three wells per acre. And this is what it looks like with the closure turf with an artificial turf on top. And we document this, and this is at the start of, right before the implementation of the mitigation measures. So by 1 year, almost 1 year later, you can see the posi shell, the white, the closure turf, and kind of counterintuitive, but because there's so much surf emissions coming through the side slopes, this is about 2.5 million tons of trash put up against the side slope to actually absorb the methane that was coming and the odors that was coming through the side slope. And lots of innovative practices to repair the flooded wells, put in pumps in series, and put on gabion tubes. This is a very innovative practice by Republic Industries. At the bottom of the landfill on the leachate collection system, they put these gabion cubes, which look like that, and it's GPSed. And so as the landfill goes up, the vertical well goes up at the same time. Very, very effective. And it lets you have full drainage and gas collection as the landfill is being operated. And even after one lift, they're already applying vacuum to it. Lot to deal with the change in the composition of the waste, because with the success of removing paper and plastic and glass, the organic content, specifically the food waste, has increased in the overall percentage of the weight in the trash that's received. So we see landfill gas generation 3 months after it's disposed. And it used to be a couple years before we got a lot of landfill gas. And for fresh trash odors, we have the misters with the odor neutralizers. And on the low areas of the ridge lines, we actually have misting systems. And even at the transfer stations to bring trash to the landfill, this is an application of an odor neutralizer at the transfer station before the trash even gets to the landfill. In addition to this, they had the landfill operator. They had to put in diversion programs for organics to reduce the amount of organics going to the landfill. So like I said, from one well per acre to almost three wells per acre, this is a lot of improvements in the infrastructure. So how is all this connected to with the flyover effort? Well, the picture on the left you see here was taken in 2017 in March. That was the start of the implementation of the mitigation measures for the odor and the methane reduction. And you can see this is this white area. It's basically plumes that were measured. And the red dots are the concentrations of where the methane plumes were detected. And you can see 3 months later, this is actually a NASA picture. It says, well, these plumes are pretty much all gone. And this is where the posi shell went in, and this is where the closure turf went in. But you see, it says there's some reduction at D. This is the edge. And this is the picture of what was happening at the edge. So this is the posi shell, the white, and this is active disposal. So they're actually removing the intermediate cover before the disposal comes up to that level. But typically in this operation, this activity is done way ahead of time. So this picture was given to the operator, and what they did was they said, okay, we're not gonna do this way ahead of time. We'll do it right before the disposal. So that was a method that reduced the amount of emissions. And the aerial data was also used to validate how good the mitigation measures were. So this is just an aerial photograph, but you can see this is the posi shell, and this is basically the disposal area. So you can see the posi shell, there's not much methane coming through, but at the where it's not covered, there's actually a lot of methane coming through. And again, this is just to show the posi shell, and where you don't have the posi shell, that shows the effectiveness. And this is a slide that Dan showed, which they track the odor complaints, the blue, against their model that predicted how much methane was actually being emitted. So it's just a direct correlation with the reduction of the odor complaints and the reduction of the amount of methane. What's really important was the validation of their models and the collaboration between our local enforcement agency and the Carbon Mapper and the NASA group. This is the actual data from the landfill. So this orange line is the amount of landfill gas that's collected. And the blue is the odor complaint. This is when all the measures went in. You can see when the infrastructure measures went in, the odor complaints dropped. But as the complaints dropped, the amount of landfill gas that was actually able to be collected jumped up by 55%. That's huge. That's a huge increase. And this is a NASA model, which showed that the amount of flux or the methane, kilograms per hour of methane coming out of the landfill basically dropped by 60%. So the amount of landfill that's measured by NASA was 60%, and the amount of landfill gas that was collected that we actually measured with the flow meter was 55%. So that's really very good. So in winding up, so this is the last slide, is basically how much difference, what's the impact of having a good landfill gas collection system. So what this is if you look at the green dots, that's the amount of, this is a 3-kilometer grid of the air basin where the landfill is located. And this the dates are about a year later. And you can see with the mitigation measures going in, the amount of emissions that's measured by remote stations, the amount of emissions that are contaminants in the atmosphere dropped. So one landfill with those improvements can make a significant increase in the quality of the air quality, significant improvement in the air quality of the whole air basin. So that's how important timely data is, especially when it's used in conjunction with a good landfill operator. So that's it. Thank you.
Morning. I'm going to step back a little bit and talk about some industry perspectives on all of this. And just by hands, who's heard of ESG? Yeah, everybody. Okay. So it's a buzzword right now. At Waste Connections, we're a garbage company. We pick up people's garbage and we handle it in an environmentally responsible manner. A big part of that responsibility is controlling air emissions. Obviously, it's a growing concern. But in addition to that, there's a social/financial influence at play through ESG. Oops, there we go. So why do we care? This is a Morgan Stanley stat that shows that funds under management with ESG-oriented funds was $1.3 trillion in 19, December of 19, and $3.9 trillion in September. So it tripled in 18 months, whatever that math is. That's an incredible amount of money flowing to one place. So I was curious about those, and what do I do with my 401k? Do I send that to an ESG fund, or do I send it somewhere else? And as a publicly traded company, we're concerned about that because we don't want people taking money from our shares and going to an ESG fund, and it'd be even better if the ESG funds were buying us. So I Googled a little bit about ESG returns. So the horizontal and vertical lines are basically the average fund, and all the dots are ESG funds. So you look at the centroid of the dots, and they return about the same as a traditional fund, maybe even a little better. The return is the horizontal line, and volatility is the vertical line. So the returns are about the same, but maybe a little more volatile. And has anybody seen the movie The Wolf of Wall Street? I also kind of wonder here a little bit, with all that money flowing to ESG funds, is the value a little bit propped up? And you don't want to be the last guy holding the shares, but we'll see what happens. The other stat that Morgan Stanley had in this regard was just the percentage of millennials that want to own ESG funds and consider that in their investing choices is significantly high. So how do ESG funds work? There are a number of companies that give ratings to various companies. They review our sustainability reports and other materials, and they grade us. Two of the main ones are MSCI and Sustainalytics. Here's like the cover grading sheet for MSCI. You can see we got a BBB rating. So you can see our rating improved from the prior year to the current year. And here is a similar page for Sustainalytics, showing us just barely in the low risk category and improved from the prior year. But these companies look through our materials and basically they check boxes. And do you have a policy, an environmental compliance policy? Do you have executive compensation? Does it include a factor for ESG targets and your actions in ESG? Do you have an environmental justice policy? So by having all those policies, you check the box and you get a better grade. So we've heard a lot about methane emissions, and I like this stat, you know, because landfills are the third largest methane emitter, which I believe is factual. But I also think you need to kind of consider that in a little bit of perspective, and there's two parts to that perspective. I guess the first is everybody seems to forget that the garbage we pick up, we didn't make. And so if we had left it on the curb, what would the emissions have been? So with the EPA stat that said 76%, was that the stat there? You know, where would we be without that 76%? And then the other factor here I like to remind folks of is for landfills, we were 114.5 million metric tons of CO2 equivalents. You start looking at the overall emissions, it's like 6,500. And so we're 1 or 2% of total emissions in CO2 equivalents. The transportation and power production are by far the largest. So at Waste Connections, as part of our sustainability report, we give an emissions disclosure statement. It's in conformance. There's a lot of different protocols you can follow to report those emissions. The ones we use are GRI and TCR. And basically, they develop a protocol for how you add everything up and how you do the calculations for your emissions. These were our emissions for 19 and 20. You can see that these will be proportionate to all of the large solid waste collection companies. Scope 1 is very large compared to Scope 2 and Scope 3. For those of you who may not know, Scope 1 is your direct emissions. So that's the fuel burn and landfill emissions, fugitive landfill emissions. Scope 2 is propane purchase, electricity purchase. And Scope 3 is indirect emissions. Indirect emissions are the jet fuel you use to fly here from travel or anything like that. So in the Scope 1, you'll see that 83% of ours is landfill emissions. 16% is diesel burn. So, you know, we employ CNG trucks. We'd love to employ electric vehicles when they become available. But there's really a limited impact you can have from conversion of truck fleets to the overall Scope 1 emissions. It's got to come from the landfills. The frustrating thing about the landfill part is it's all the EGRITS calculations from the US EPA. And so for most sites that have a collection system, you assign a collection efficiency for that landfill, call it 75%, and you collect however much gas, and the equation assumes that the remaining 25% is what you emit. Well, if I collect 100 this year, that means I emit 25. If I put loci wellheads on and I collect 200 next year, well, now my emissions went up mathematically, yet I collected more gas. So intuitively, that doesn't make sense. And that's frustrating because you get penalized for doing a good job. So I couldn't find a picture of landfill emissions because it's invisible. So this is a geyser from Yellowstone. Dan already talked a lot about Carbon Mapper. This was from another presentation, which we didn't have Dan, so I think he's already covered that, so I will skip that in the interest of time. But we're very much a fan of the laser spectroscopy. I think the science of that is very strong. The challenge, as I see it, is less about measuring how much methane, but it's more about how you combine it with weather data. And I know at our landfills, and when I go to landfills, there's pockets and wind tunnels and dead spaces where things accumulate. And when you take a reading, whether it's a satellite, a plane, or a drone, that's giving you that snapshot in time. But what it doesn't account for is if I have a leak at the landfill on this side and wind's blowing this way, and you take your concentration here, this spot has accumulation of any leak that handles upstream and then is flowing down, right? So they superimpose on top of each other. And we see this, so we own several drones with the lasers attached. And when we fly it, and in one particular, my favorite case study is a site in that's in a quarry, an old quarry. And where we get the highest readings for methane is at the toe of the high wall for the quarry. There's no garbage there, but the wind carries it down from the landfill and it sits low at the base of the high wall. So, you know, you gotta combine what you're reading with accurate weather data. And if you have a concentration and if the model assumes winds 10 miles an hour versus 20 miles an hour, suddenly your emissions double. So I think that's a key component of it. So there's a lot of, or several companies out there doing different things to address that. A lot of it's drone-based. So this particular company uses a tube to pull gas samples at and orients that low to the ground. This particular one runs a laser between two drones, and the drones raise and lower at the same time, and the laser shoots across to the other drone, and the reflector gives them a bigger distance that they can cover between that, and they kind of drop a sheer curtain so that as a plume moves through it, it crosses that plane. It kind of uses a continuity basis to measure emissions. And the drones have wind meters on them as well to get specific wind data. And I should say that's true for the one I mentioned before the slide earlier. This particular company, it's kind of hard to see in this slide, but those blue lines are actually vertical. So basically the drone flies back and forth at incremental elevations and kind of creates a plane and then measure methane as it comes across. Now the challenge with these technologies is you gotta have good weather, right? Because and we've done some tests at landfills. We coordinated it with Daniel and when they flew sites in Florida. And as the weather shifts, if the weather shifts while you're flying it, you know, due to battery limitations, you can fly this side of the landfill, then you swap out the battery and you do this side of the landfill. Well, if the wind's going due east, you get all the emissions on this side. If the wind's flowing due south, you get the emissions on this side. So you gotta kind of watch the wind and the weather. So some other things about the garbage industry to kind of round out the ESG picture. And this is things we do in our daily course of business that kind of go unrecognized in the overall emissions category. And that is we generate a lot of carbon offsets that are just intrinsic to our operations. The waste we put in our landfills is sequestered there. Some of it never decomposes, and it will be there in perpetuity. So we are sequestering carbon as a function of the waste we place in our landfills. We utilize the landfill gas for electrical generation or RNG production. The recycling we do, you know, offsets the need to produce virgin materials and the emissions associated with that. We run CNG in our trucks. And interestingly enough, when you add that all up, we actually have a negative carbon footprint as a company. So what can we do to do more? It's tough to set an absolute emissions reduction goal when all of our emissions are scope one fugitive landfill emissions that you can't really measure. So what we can do though is focus on those offset projects. You know, can we do more recycling? Can we do more gas recovery and beneficial use of that gas? And for us, we view leachate management as an item in our operations that we want to control more. So our goals are set up to do more recycling, use more landfill gas, collect and use more landfill gas. And that's it. Thank you.